in a bar near Leeds City Art Gallery talking to Douglas Gordon.
It's one of three wall drawings which are a similar scale. I made the first one in Germany, I did the second one in Germany, I did the third one in Rotterdam, and I've done the first one again in Leeds. And they describe, I suppose, the three states of desire for amnesia, which would be the one in Leeds is I cannot remember anything. The other two are I have forgotten everything and I remember nothing, which is quite positive in a way, kind of positive desire for a state of nothingness.
I mean, a lot of people would argue when you're talking to them that certain decisions are made for pragmatic reasons, and I'm quite curious about this as an idea in relation to your work, whether or not the manner of presentation is coming from kind of pragmatic decisions or whether it's much more complicated than that.
I suppose a bit of both. I mean, like you, I don't have a studio, and you know, you work on in your bedroom, in trains, on buses, in planes, in hotels, so you have a fair idea of what you want to make, but you know, almost always the work isn't prefabricated, it's always done on the spot. And for instance, in Leeds, I telephoned them and said, this is the Pantone number that I need, paint the wall, I want a 3 meter band running across the wall from one edge to another edge, centre it on the wall, if it doesn't look good centred, drop it, it doesn't matter to me, I just wanted to turn up with that having been done. I phoned up another company, got them to make some text in vinyl which I could come and stick on in 6 hours, you know, as quickly as possible. So yeah, there are pragmatic decisions as to what has gone into the presentation, but I mean, I suppose they are never prioritised, you know, it is pure pragmatism on that side of the production, which leaves you free to be able to play kind of psychological games, whatever, on the other side. Again, to go back to that idea of, you know, there are reasons why we are working on walls. I mean, there's no particular reason why. It's not a commitment to that medium in absolute terms. Because I'm not making wall drawings about why I'm not painting in this instance.
I just wondered if there's any way that you could talk about this whole idea of presentation as such, because it seems that you do use various modes of presentation simultaneously in quite a sophisticated way, but you're quite reserved or something about talking about it. It's like you don't go on about it much. It just seems to happen.
I probably don't talk about it because I don't think about it very much. I mean, I'm not really meaning that to be blasé. There's a certain vocabulary that I've been educated with. I'm probably going to dig a huge hole for myself here, but there's a certain kind of vocabulary that I've got in terms of ways to present or a means to presentation of an idea, and it's never been an issue with me. It's never been an interest of mine to try and break that vocabulary because I'm not interested in breaking it. You make appropriate modifications to the way you are with people, depending on the situation. And that's exactly the same as what, you know, I do with the ideas I've got. You know, if it's appropriate to have it as a telephone call in a bar somewhere, then that's the way we do it. If it's appropriate for a letter, we do it that way. If I want to make a film, I do it, you know, the other way. And, you know, I'm lucky enough to get support with all these things.
Could the subject of a letter find its way into a wall drawing, and could the subject of a wall drawing, the detail of a wall drawing, fall into a performance or something like this?
Probably in terms of the details, no. But then the similarity between what you might call the language content of that wall drawing, which says, I cannot remember anything. If you compare that to, say, a letter that I did in New York last year, which says, I remember more than you know, compare that to a telephone call which said, I won't breathe a word to anyone, you know, there's overlap there in terms of what you might pick up on. It's like the frequencies overlap, and I'm happy with that. They're kind of different frequencies, but all in the same wavelength.
In the same bar, later on, with Graham Gutton.
I should really talk about the process that I went through in order to end up with the finished result. It's basically what you're confronted with in a gallery is a sound map about 3 meters across. The sound is taken from a pornographic film, and the sentence and the music which is being used is the title of the piece. The title of this piece is "I wish that you could be here with us," and in brackets, "Summertime when the living is easy." So there's this moment of kind of invitation from one of the characters in the film, and its notion of or allusion to a kind of perfect space. Summertime and the living is easy. Everything's fine, and you're invited into this kind of utopia. What happens is that the sound is fed into a computer. I then take the computer readout of that map, which looks like a landscape. It's a three-dimensional grid with hills and valleys, etc. That map is then redrawn in pencil onto paper. That translation is quite an important aspect because it kind of removes it once more, because the sound is already overdubbed on the movie. Then there's another translation involving my own hand, my own. Cause it's kind of the artist's hand kind of joins in with that activity. It's as if I kind of put my body into the activity that's taking place. And then that is then photographed and projected onto the wall, much larger. The drawing's only around half a meter across. And then basically just traced out onto the wall. Previously, the pieces have been in blue on white. This is the first time I've made a piece using the negative of that. I like the idea of this negative because it's like an impression has been left. It's like, so the wall appears like a huge sheet of carbon paper on which a tracing has been made. And so you're left with this kind of absence rather than a presence. And then the title is included with that, so it's like a readout from a single sheet.
This whole question of using the wall as a way to present certain ideas, what level is it at in comparison to your whole project?
Well, the use of the wall is... when you use a wall on that scale, you're involving the spectator. The spectator's within the work. It's not like a painting or an object or whatever. You're actually placed within it because it's part of the architecture of the building, etc. So you're confronted in a different way, kind of implicated on a different kind of level, which is, I think, essential in the work that I'm doing. But there's also, I quite like this quite quite obvious notion of a sound wall, of a wall of sound being presented to you. So the richness of the colour, etc., and the fact that it is a sound made into an image, and those translations are all kind of important.
There does seem to be something, though, that I'm interested in asking you about, which is to do with what you could call a kind of second-order idealization, because some things seem to involve areas that are normally treated as optimistic or pleasurable, or things like the listing of the hotels and the future shock supernature type idea. This kind of, it's not seen as pure science, but it's seen as connected to that. But
yeah, it's kind of a, well, it's to do with notions of, I suppose there's a kind of notion of, I'm playing or using and getting involved with notions of various ways of thinking and utopias. Progress toward certain ways of thinking and moving away from those ways of thinking again. This is very clear in the Supernature piece. I mean, it's again dated 1970, so there's this kind of a recent kind of past involved, from which you move back toward and then away from again when you kind of, you know, the date of the work is then included as well. So there's a kind of distance opened up. Like, that's a time aspect coming into the work again. I'm kind of interested in that, the way the work is remembered, and the sound piece, for example, people going away from that this evening, whistling Summertime when the Living is Easy. So the kind of work has entered or been received in a different kind of way. It's kind of and it's remembered, and there's a relationship between image and sound there, which I'm kind of interested in as well. So they carry that. They don't carry away a memory of an image so much as, well, they carry away a memory of an image and a sound at the same time, or a tune. So when they, you know, if they find themselves whistling that some other time, then they'll remember that image again. I'm interested in the way that kind of imprints itself and the way it stays intact. The notion of wall drawings and the idea of them being like, there's been quite a lot of talk about this it being a temporary show, because when the show ends, the work will be painted over. But I mean, that's not that different to me to any show. I mean, all shows are temporary to a certain degree, and work is temporary in the way that it's, when it's displayed, it's working, and when it's not, it's closed. So, I mean, it's that's kind of been assimilated into that way, into that activity already, and so I'm not using it in that way. I'm not making any claim about the lifespan of the work and the way it may be working against the notion of the object, etc. It's really not my concern. It's just another way of making work.
In Leeds City Art Gallery, talking to Angela Bullock.
Well, the piece exists as a machine, a title, and some mud, which has been put onto the wall using the machine. The machine's on the floor and the mud's on the wall. And then there's a title, which is Mudslinger, which has been put in reverse on the wall. So it's just the wall showing through a kind of whole splatter of mud. The thing that I use to make the wall thing is a large vat of mud. It's also, there's a pressure pot and a compressor and various bits of garden hose. And when I've installed this piece before, it was all in the round, and that piece included a sprinkler that goes in the round as well. But this piece doesn't have it because it's just two long straight lines.
But do you consider these things to be wall drawings in a kind of historical sense?
Really, it's the kind of, it's not simply a wall drawing. It's really a structure, as you said. It's different elements which all add up to even question or highlight the other elements which it's involved in, really, not involved in, but which it is.
I mean, the thing that seems to single out this work and the other one, which is a drawing machine triggered by sitting on a bench, is this idea of action.
It's different to a wall painting in the sense like this, which is opposite, like Douglas Gordon's or other ones in the show, mainly by the sense that it fetishizes the viewer more, because it actually allows the possibility for the viewer to have an effect on the situation. The first wall drawing machine I made, I just called it a drawing machine. It happens, well, all the machines draw on the wall, but the first one I did was called Blue Horizons. It was in 1990. That was interactive with a viewer, in the sense that if you were too close to the machine, it would change, it would affect the drawing being made. This one is different to that. The machine, when it's working, draws vertical lines continuously and just edges across at the top. So you get a kind of double vertical line, which moves along at the top a little bit horizontally. And that's the stand. That's the drawing, which is in process for the length of the exhibition. However, when you sit on the bench, which is placed just directly in front of the machine, the drawing is changed. Then the lines would become horizontal lines. So it affects the drawing that's being made by the very act of looking at it.
How do you feel about the way these function in context to the rest of the work?
Well, it does, for me, it highlights the things which are interesting about the work once you step over the basic thematic of the exhibition, which isn't necessarily so interesting at all. It's just a bit like an excuse. You have to focus on something like the interaction of the viewer, the cause and effect, the structure of the thing, the very idea that you have even made a structural element, and the fact that most other things are in the show and are formally flat and directly on the wall pieces even highlights the whole structure of what I'm actually making.
Your work somehow seems to still acknowledge the potential for a kind of process debate about how something's actually done. Do you see that as a kind of optimistic, sort of almost utopian thing, or is there a level of that kind of distrust and uncertainty in your work as well?
Yes, I think the uncertainty is there. Not in the same way as other works in the show, but in the sense that to make a machine is to have a kind of utopian idea about its process and about its function. And there's the question of function, it's a strong one. And when things... if you make something that actually has a particular prescribed function, there's an awful lot more of implicit intention involved just in that idea. If you make a wall painting and the letter is slightly higher or slightly lower, the intention is not always so crucial as a kind of question of function. And so it draws more focus on what the intention is. And functional things... in an everyday sense, operate as those functional things, but we don't necessarily think of their formal qualities or their little part in a whole structure of things and how they fit together and what their position is relative to your use of them, or how, for instance, the whole structure of a museum works, or how people work with each other or not. So it inherently opens the possibility of dysfunction or disorder or things that, or some kind of breakdown, really. It just inherently in the utopian idea that it possibly could be a perfect idea. That's part and parcel of the intention, I think.
Later the same day, in Leeds City Art Gallery with Craig Wood.
We're standing in front of a well-lit wall, which is, as you come down the stairs, it's right in front of you. And on the wall there are a number of different structures that are actually somehow drilled into the wall and indicate certain patterns and forms. So I wonder if you'd tell me a bit about this piece, Craig.
Well, this work derives from a whole series of drawings on paper and on plastics using a dot technique with ink, which itself came from archaeology, and it's supposed to be a neutral style so that you don't have thousands of archive drawings in people's different expressive or supposedly expressive styles. It's supposed to be a neutral style. It's a quasi-neutral style, of course. From these paper drawings, which were all the objects were kind of disposable plastic objects, plastic milk bottles, things with about a 1 second attention span in our culture. I would draw these things incredibly laboriously and in a one-off form, like as in an archive drawing. And then this piece that we're looking at now is the codes on the base of a bottle of ammonia that I found in Germany. I've shown each element separately. I've shown three of these elements separately. This is the whole lot, the whole ensemble. I don't actually know what any of it means in terms of the codes. Is that it's like a language that I'm not privy to, and it's like a language which we don't ever ask about, which is incredible because it's ubiquitous, it's on everything, but it's just none of our business.
Yeah, I'm quite curious about them in relation to other work that you've done, because they also have a kind of sympathy to a place. Like it's one thing you can do to a wall. Mm. But then again, they also kind of they ruin the wall in a way more than a lot of other people's work has. They have that feeling of precision about them, and in a similar way, some of the earlier water pieces again had a sort of sympathy to a place in the sense that they'd follow the lines of the floorboards or the way the place was. But then again, they also make the floor completely useless. You can't move around so easily. You have to be careful where you tread. Is that something, is this kind of play something that you're conscious of, or is that just a byproduct, do you think, of what you're doing?
No, I think that's very true. I mean, I think there's definitely a kind of like with the floor pieces, there's definitely something like inviting you in a way, but also something completely denying you. I mean, it invites tactile, like for example, the floor pieces invite a kind of tactile contact, and they're very alluring, but you can't actually get to grips with them because you'll destroy it. It's like kind of present that you can't open, you know. It's something like that, and it's something to do with this as well, with the wall also, that you've just, you know, there is a connection. I mean, there's also obviously connections in formal levels, like it's all mapping, it's all drawing and archiving, like whether you'd be mapping the floor or archiving kind of trash, as it were. It's kind of mapping and making special, if you like, something that's very, very common, something that you stand on or something that you throw away. There is that in common. And also this thing with the skin. It's really weird that the whole panic about the water pieces was whether they would be burst. That was one of the main things. Were they going to break? Was somebody going to stand on it? And this whole thing here is just purely about breaking and penetrating that skin. It's like kind of my own reaction to the last work, just, you know, something like that.
Was this work first done in Germany, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a stab at it last year in London, but nothing much. But yeah, it evolved really seriously last year, like the end of about where that says about autumn of 93. And then this is about the fourth one I've done.
Of all the artists in the show, you're the one I don't immediately think of as someone working on the wall. I mean, in fact, the opposite. I think of other work completely. How do you feel? Do you feel happy about this context and working in this among this group of artists?
I mean, in the end, you feel a bit like a kind of slave to architecture or context, and the idea of like constantly having to respond and react to various situations that you, in truth, you don't find particularly interesting. You don't really want to respond or react to them, or if you do, your response isn't really very interesting. I mean, I just didn't want to continually have to be put into that situation. So it's nice to have a feeling of independence, or, you know, even though it's obviously a wall show with more directly sort of in the wall, it's still much more flexible than previous work.
Sometime earlier, in Southampton, talking to Lily van der Stoker.
I make a lot of magic marker drawings, and then the wall paintings are just enlargements of the magic marker drawing. So what you see is also the thick lines are just in the real work, they are like ballpoint lines, but here they get like a centimeter wide or something. Like yesterday for the television, they asked me, the first question was, why are you shaped so bubbly and round? And then I said, well, why don't you ask Daniel Buren why his stripes are so straight? it's very difficult to answer that, I think.
But would you say that there was a sense in which you were kind of challenging a sort of orthodoxy, something that's existing there's a sort of art formalism that's already become, everyone knows about. It's like, has its own little places, and somehow it means that there are certain things you're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is really forms and paint, and it's really very classical in a way. But and the idea that I don't do anything new is very much part of the whole work. And if people tell me that this work looks very modern, then I'm very surprised, because I always think that's my one big problem, that I can't be modern or I can't make anything modern. And there's a very, I have a very, I say, a double relation to modernity. And so on the one hand, I always think, oh, it has to get some sort of, I have to give it some sort of modern feeling to it. And maybe the only modern thing is the fluorescent paint. Like Robert Barry would maybe say that his work was work of the of the 20th century. And I can't say that. I'm not sure about that, if it's from this century. And I like if people say about this work that they think they have seen it somewhere before, because that's what I think. It has that in it, and which is fine. Actually, the wonderful, which you see over there, that's... I have tried to really, in a very superficial way, to express the word wonderful. And let's say that I tried to do it in sort of gold yellow, and I've tried to do it in blue and green. But in the end, I just come to a very standard color scheme. That is the colors that you just buy in the store. They are exactly... That's the colors that if you buy a very simple color set for fluorescence for children, it's those colors. Which is interesting, that something which looks wonderful is very standard.
Does it have some kind of irony in it?
Well, I would say very much no, but the more that I talk about it, I think that the more that I talk about it, I'm beginning to doubt that. But I think a lot of people see a certain irony in there, which relates to the flowers and maybe that it looks like the 60s. But I think the irony that is in the work and is maybe a bit more hidden has to do with ugliness and aesthetics. More than the easy thing for people is to think that the irony has to do with the childhood and being not grown up or something, and that's exactly not the irony that I use.
Do you feel that the work is directly related to this kind of feminist thinking, or is that just something that's in the air anyway?
No, I always end up in interviews and just talking about feminism endlessly, but. Yeah, so I think the work is definitely relates to that. It's girlish, and people have asked me this from the beginning, even when I didn't see it. And I think with that question, people have put the answer already in my mouth, and that is the answer is in feminism. And which I don't know if I like that, but I guess it has to be that way. If I want to do things that relate to me as a person, and since I'm a woman, that's my the feminine imagery is part of my life and my history. So, and if this is a very shocking material, then it's immensely interesting why this is. I think that would also be interesting to call certain works for art masculine, but people don't do that yet so much. That I would really like to see, because I think that works of art can be very sex specific, and if people are going to acknowledge that, then my work, which celebrates the feminine, whatever that could be, then it wouldn't be a hostile thing anymore if they acknowledge the difference.
About 5 minutes later, in another room in Southampton City Art Gallery, with Robert Barry.
The architecture of the place is quite specific, it's worth pointing out. It's got extremely shiny, possibly sort of varnished brick floors, and these kind of stone skirting boards and stone door frames. So the yellow wall is basically following it's already specific by... The architecture. It has a moulding at the top and this heavy skirting at the bottom, so it's actually the available wall space that's being used. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about the piece that you've installed for this exhibition.
Well, I didn't know what I was going to do when I came here. The photos were a little bit deceptive that they sent me. But I decided on yellow because, for several reasons, the room next to me was quite dark. The Saul LeWitt piece and the Patterson piece were already pretty well along, and so I wanted something to contrast with that. And I wanted a light color that was very, very sensitive to the light that was coming in through the roof, the skylight. The ceiling above the upper border is white, and so that was easy with the words. I wanted the words to kind of go up into that white, to kind of disappear into the white above the yellow. And as you can see, some of the words are cut off at the top. They sort of run off or come down from the ceiling. And I just sort of played around with yellow and white and till we got a color that I thought would be something that I could live with. I wanted a kind of upbeat feeling, something bright. And as I say, very sensitive to the light and change, because I want the piece to change throughout the day. Something that, so that element of time and so forth looks like it's being used very specifically. And then the words I chose from my list, I have a list of about 200 words that I work with. I wanted to work a little bit in opposition to the feeling of the color, which was sort of uplifting and so forth. And there I wanted the feeling to be in contrast to that. And that was the general idea that I came up with the morning of a week ago when I first arrived and saw the space. And so we sort of went ahead and did it. My preference is not to work with some specific theory or philosophy of art or some political point I'm trying to get across. I can't think like that. I don't work like that at all. And I mean, every artist has their story, whatever, and they're usually pretty good stories, their reasons for doing what they do. But I want to try and create some kind of more, I don't know how you would say, but something that's maybe more poetic or has to do with a specific situation that grows out of the place and the people that are in it and where it is and that sort of thing, and deal with whatever elements of art that are important to me, and which is basically space and movement and being in a situation, dealing with the situation that I've created. So this is a very specific but fluid place, and will only be here for a certain amount of time, which is very important, that idea that we all know this thing is going to be painted over in 6 weeks. So it has to be dealt with now. It'll never be done again. And, of course, the architecture itself, all of the little details, the corners, the molding, the exit sign, the way that the doors are situated, and the way they interrupt the words, or the words have to sort of fight around the molding, and all those little architectural details that are there, the fire alarm, all of that, I try to incorporate, I try to work that into the overall design, not try to cover it up, but to use it in some way, which makes the piece really a kind of, a kind of a reflection of real life situations, which is what I think of the piece as being. I mean, it's a kind of metaphor for what it is to live or to be in this world. It's the way I think of these pieces, and I based on the style which I've developed over the years, try to do something which I haven't done before. I've never used these colors or this particular group of words or even this size of letter. I mean, we worked out the scale of everything when we were here. The placement, all of that was all worked out in situ, in here, while we're doing. And I kind of like that idea of coming into a situation and working with the situation. It's unpredictable. It can be a total disaster, a total failure. You rely on the craftsmanship of other people. I don't do this all myself, but we had to get other people really to help out on their skills, what the limitations are. It's a way I like to work, as opposed to work which is done in a studio where you can sort of work things over and make corrections and so forth. Here, there's very little room for mistake. You're working under a certain amount of time. There's an opening day, and it has to be finished by then. We can't, the day of the opening decide it's all wrong. I just can't paint it all out. I've got to live with it. And I like that. I like that kind of way of making art and putting my reputation on the line by doing it. I think it's a kind of a good way to do things.
In a bar near Southampton City Art Gallery with Julie Roberts.
It started off in 1990 in a project called Castlemilk Woman House in Glasgow, and I was given a room, a living room and a house to make a piece of work in, make a painting in. And I did a kind of similar painting where I took contemporary surgical instruments and just ran them around, completely around the room, and painted them in a very kind of lifelike manner. And so I guess this is a kind of another version of it, but I've located it in the space here, in that I've taken not contemporary surgical instruments, but I've taken instruments from the late 18th century, because it seemed like the museum, well, the gallery looked like a museum, so I took instruments that came from a museum, took photographs of them in the museums, and did the same kind of thing, ran them around the wall in the room.
But this kind of way of working, which involves this this kind of painting style, did the wall drawings come first, or did the paintings come first?
The paintings come first, and a lot of my friends in Glasgow were making installations, and because I was painting, I couldn't really make an installation as such with objects or found objects or whatever. So it was my way of making an installation while still retaining making a painting.
But there's something that happens as a result that means that you can almost do two different... You can almost do two things which are really, really similar, like these paintings on canvas and then painting on the wall almost in an identical way, but they become completely different. Was that something that you realised would happen, or was it just an accident? It just turned out that way?
Well, when I first made the painting installation in Glasgow in 1990, I was totally shocked and totally chuffed, because I didn't know what it was going to look like. It was just one of those experimental pieces. And when I'd finished the piece, I realised it was, you know, quite original, I think, for me. And now, you know, so I don't know, now I'm picking up from there, now I'm starting them again. So I mean, I did another wall painting in Windfall, which I felt was, I did the kind of typical wall painting in a way, where I covered the wall, you know, blue, and then hung some, you know, painted some images on them, and it didn't work. So I think this format for me seems to work quite well, because like in the paintings where the images float in this kind of void, in a way, this background, you know, dark background, which sometimes becomes like an empty space or whatever, well, this acts in the same way, where the images float in the space. Some children went in there yesterday and said, oh, they're all going to drop off. They thought they were real things just hanging in space or something, I don't know. But that's the effect, like in the paintings.
But does it make you work in a different way to how you would work if you were... I mean, do you think that they're sort of diverging, the two forms of work that I'm familiar with, the paintings and the wall drawings? Do you see them heading in different directions, or will they remain as kind of complementary activities somehow?
I think they're kind of parallel in a way. I think there are a lot of things that are equally going on in both works, similar things like floating images, playing around with your perception, playing around with illusion, and playing around with painting, you know. They kind of diverge in that kind of one's traditional and one isn't, you know. Or you can talk about fresco and murals, but really they're strangely contemporary, you know, I think.
Are they quite time-consuming to carry out? I mean, one of the other things that's notable about this whole thing is the idea that for a lot of the artists, the reason to work on the wall means that you can get other people to do the work for you. But these pieces of yours, they have to be done by you. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't get an assistant. Everyone else had about 20 helpers, you know. And I was I always say, look, painting's such a lonely activity. And then even when I kind of break out into, you know, this kind of installation kind of realm, you know, I still have to sit on my own in a room and make these paintings by myself. Except I've got neighbours, I've got people to chat to, which is nice, you know.
But are they... I mean, a lot of the way wall drawings talked about is ends up being discussions of how you could commodify them, like how, you know, people end up talking about certificates and how to deal with them and what to do with them, and they get very involved in the question of what is an artwork.
Yeah.
Is this something that has come up, or do these pieces end up being generally done for public spaces? Are they commodifiable? That's the question.
I suppose for me it's definitely not a commodity, because I do make paintings, you know, that people can take away with them. I do make movable objects, you know, and I guess, you know, this is my way of not doing that. It's kind of nice. I know that the painting's going to be, you know, painted over, all that hard work, and, you know, it's gone, but you can do that, I think.